Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, January the 4th, 2013. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-hosts, Alyssa Ray.
Hi.
And Jackie McIntosh.
Hi.
And our guest co-host, Jenny Rempel.
Hello.
Hello, and happy 2013, everyone. Today is a show themed for the new year. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded this respect that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our first main segment today, we'll be talking about planning for healthful animal advocacy in 2013. It's a new year with new beginnings, and I'd like to talk about steps that we can take into stepping into animal advocacy for the new year, but doing so in a sustainable manner that will ensure our health and happiness so that we can continue to do this work and not burn out. We'll all be sharing our own tips and advice in this segment from our experiences, and I hope that you can learn from our own journeys in animal advocacy. And for our feature interview today, we have an activist profile with vegan food writer Grant Butler. Grant wasn't always a vegan food writer, and he will be sharing with us his unique story on how he transitioned from being a typical meat eater several years ago to now a person who lives a vegan lifestyle, but not only that, promotes it through the work he does, which is writing for a mainstream newspaper publication in his city of Portland, Oregon. That interview is coming up in about 33 minutes, so please stay tuned. So, Jackie, it's a new year. What does that mean for you?
Well, first off, Happy New Year's, everyone.
Thank you.
I know it's the time of the year where people like to set goals, or as they're commonly called, resolutions. First, I'm not really a big fan of the term resolution. I feel that it has a lot of negative connotations, and people feel like they're resolved to do something. So I prefer to look at it as more of a wish, hope, or aspiration for the year ahead. I feel that that's also, in general, a lot less negative and a lot less intimidating. For myself, I hope to start meditating and doing yoga more often, as I feel it helps me regain focus and gives me some time of calm. I used to meditate every day after work and do yoga quite often as well. I have since started working longer days and just started doing it less and less frequently. Since I work in a somewhat stressful and at times emotionally demanding environment, I feel that it's something that's important for my mental health as well as will help me remain more centered when involved in animal rights demonstrations or events. I don't know what do you have, Allison, that you're hoping to accomplish in the new year?
Well, I like the new year because I feel it presents just sort of a clean slate and a brand new open door to sort of, you know, don't worry about what happened last year, but to set new intentions for the new year. And it's new beginnings, new opportunities, new chance to be whatever you want to be. So for me, it always revolves around happiness, I think, because what are we in life, right? If we're not happy, we can't do anything. We can't help the animals. So that's sort of what the grand scheme of things is for me. And my New Year's resolutions culminate sort of all into that. So I've been thinking about this past week, as I always do at this time of the year. And my resolutions or goals or intentions, I don't mind the word resolution because I don't like tie myself to like I must do this. Last year I resolved to take baths more often. I took one bath all year, so that's okay. So that was my example. I was thinking, that didn't work out very well.
And was that one more than last year though?
Than the previous year? It was probably less, actually. Yeah, it was probably a lot less. I think you need to speak into your mic more if you want to.
Well, every year's different, you know, yeah. Everything's changing.
Yeah, right? So I have small things in my life that I want to do, like I want to eat more pomegranates because I've been reading a lot about that, and it's amazing food, but that sort of just is an example of like eating better and feeling more healthy, being happy. I want to do like a 10-day juice cleanse, and I've been like toying with that idea all year and reading lots about it, but I've never just jumped into it. So what better time than the new year just to jump into that? Other things that I want to resolve to do, such as with the radio show, which is a really large part of my life, is I just want to really work on making it better. And we've talked about that before, all of us in the show. I think that's maybe a resolution or a goal of everyone here, is to just grow the show and just to make it a better thing for outreach for the animals and reaching out to more people. So that's one more thing. Another thing I want to do is I want to write more for the animals, for myself. I really enjoy writing, and I do have a blog, but there's not much on it yet. So that's something that I really need to work on. And all this sort of comes into time management, which we'll actually be talking about later.
I like that you said the word intention. That rings more true with me than this whole, you know, I'm going to change my whole life this year. But I read a really good article about the yin side of resolutions. We make all these like outward resolutions. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be better. There's the other side. I mean, I have some of those goals as well. But there's the other side that I think is equally as important, but not as honored in our culture, to just look within and just accept what is. Accept that we're imperfect, that we're, you know, totally not going to be everything we want to be. And it's just, you know, step by step.
Just be the best you can be.
And also, yeah, and we're just totally flawed. Like, hello. And that's okay. And so just that sort of acceptance, I think, is important. So just some of my inward goals are, yeah, just trying to be more easy on myself and accepting that, you know, things aren't going to be perfect. I'm on the way. Every show I do is, you know, not perfect, but it's getting better, and I'm using my voice better. And I want to make one of my show goals is I want to do more themed shows with, like, this is the whole theme of the show, mm-hmm. and have two speakers talking on similar things, and also more yoga, like Jackie said, mm-hmm. That inner balance and self-reflection and checking where my voice is coming from. And yeah, because you have to have that self-health in order to reach out into the world and make a difference. Do we have time? Do you have?
I think we have another minute.
Goals, Jenny?
I think I would just add that for myself, I keep a blog actually that I have been terrible with this past year, but I always find it really great to be able to go back and look at what I've resolved to in previous years. I don't mind the word resolve because I think I can resolve any moment, anytime. It's always happening. But for myself, I've been keeping more of a bucket list as of late, so it was really interesting to reflect back on the things I did last year, or like what came into my life and where I can still go. But I've decided to take the year timeline off and more just think about the future in general, because some of these things, you know, the flavors have to melt together, but one day we'll eat the soup.
Yeah. And I think people often get focused on that timeline, as we said.
Well, thank you for that. We resolve to, in general, I think, just do whatever we can do to achieve better for the animals in 2013.
Exactly. Yep. 100.5 means non-commercial,
but if you call now,
listener-powered community radio. 100.5 means music, public affairs,
I have a dream,
and arts programming.
Right up in here, we'll make a happy little cloud.
You won't find anywhere else on the radio dial. 100.5 is not owned by a huge corporation. We are owned and operated by people like you, by your community.
Serve the people.
.5 is CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Find our complete program schedule at www.cooperadio.org.
All right, so it's that time for events. So coming up tomorrow, we have another March on the Fur Stores. And I attended one of these. This one coming up will be tomorrow, actually. So it's that time again to converge against the animal exploiters and take a stand for those being oppressed. We will not stand for the forceful confinement, torture, and murder of beautiful animals for fashion. So let's take to the streets and take a stand for those who cannot speak for themselves. On Saturday, January 5th, a group demonstration will visit fur shops downtown and speak out against the use of animals for fashion, meeting at the Vancouver Art Gallery on the Georgia side at 3:30 to distribute signage and then march from there. But you can also make your own signs if you are so creative. And then again on Saturday, January 5th, from 6:30 to 9:30, Berlin-based Australian singer-songwriter will be embarking on a solo winter tour of BC, including her first performance for tour at Tau Organics in North Van. So join her for an intimate winter evening concert on acoustic guitar and electric piano with some delicious food and drinks.
What's her name?
I actually don't know how to pronounce it. Sorry.
Emmeline Delapay.
There you go.
And we're going to play her song at the end
of the show today. Sorry, I'm bad with pronunciation. So a suggested donation of $5 or more is appreciated for those who want to support independent music. And 20% of CD sales go to a local animal charity, which is to be announced, I believe, still. And then Tuesday, January 8th, it's a Liberation BC Volunteer Night again. That's 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the ING Cafe, 466 Howe Street in Vancouver. So this is just another volunteer night, getting lots of work done and having fun, and lots of yummy vegan snacks will be provided. So just drop by.
It's a great place to just like network and meet new people.
Exactly. And Liberation BC is wonderful. Yeah. So. Yeah. And then on the evening of January 26th, Alyssa actually let me know of this event, Community Yoga Vancouver is launching its first zine. It's a grassroots-inspired collection of musings, rants, and reflections on yoga, politics, and community care. As part of our vision for this event, they decided to open up the space to performers and vendors. So if you are interested in performing at this event or would like to set up a table to sell goods, please send an email to communityyogavancouver@gmail.com with a short description of what you plan to sell, perform.
Mm-hmm. One of my resolutions is to sing more, and I plan to sing an animal-related song there.
That's a great resolution.
And also, another resolution, their next zine will be launched in April, and I'm going to have an article in there about yoga and animals. See, yes. I said it on the radio, so I have to do it now.
Wow, exciting. All right, and that's all we have. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thanks for that, Jackie. You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. So it's a new year, and we are therefore presented with opportunities for new beginnings and an opportunity to evaluate the changes that we wish to make in ourselves this coming year when it comes to our advocacy for the animals. We've already spoken about setting intentions and goals at the beginning of the show, and what I want to focus on in this segment is giving you, our listeners, some personal empowerment in taking the next steps in your journey for your advocacy for the animals in 2013. So perhaps stepping into animal activism or any kind of activism is a new thing for you, and maybe you don't know exactly where to start, or maybe you're faced with the challenge of how to fit in this additional activity into your life when you're already so busy in what you already do in your daily lives. So what we do know for sure is that the animals need us to speak up for them, as they cannot do so for themselves. But I think it's also really important to be able to take care of ourselves first so that we can ably and healthfully do so without sacrificing the health of our own selves in the process, because of course we won't be any good to the animals if our own well-being is suffering. We will talk about that soon, but first I want to chat about ideas of what you can do to take first steps into animal advocacy. I think some people are fine with just plunging right away into major activism, such as attending and perhaps even organizing animal rights events, but I know that kind of thing isn't for everyone, and other people, like Jackie, might be more suited to doing, or I shouldn't say more suited, but you do a lot of things, but we're talking about armchair advocacy, such as writing and social network activism. If you're not sure what you want to do to help the animals, I think that it's important to first explore your options and to find your niche as to what works for you within your chosen lifestyle and your interests. So Alyssa, Jackie, and Jenny, I'd like to know what has worked for you when it comes first to stepping into being advocates for the animals. Can you share with us what you have or haven't tried and what you found to be your niche, or and what approach you take personally when it comes to your advocacy for the animals?
Sure. Well, for me, like you said, social networking, like my Facebook page is full of activist-y type things. And I, you know, at first when I was started doing that, I thought, oh, I'm going to get so much negativity because most of the people on there are not vegan. But actually, you know, I've gotten quite a few positive responses, and actually two people, because of this that I know of, two and a half maybe, have decided to transition to a vegan lifestyle. So that's really exciting. It's just the power of social networking, like you said. Another thing that I think is good is just try to know the local groups and just get involved with them if you can, like just making signs or...
Those are really good, like attending that Liberation BC volunteer night, as Alyssa was saying, it's a good way just to meet people and to sort of get out there, take your first steps.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with that.
And the animal advocacy camp too would be a great step to go and just learn if you're not, you know, not sure where exactly you want to go. There's so many different routes of, you know, possibility with animal advocacy.
That's an event coming up in February that we've been talking about in Vancouver. And, you know, even in your own communities, there's probably events like that. I also suggest joining, like, your local, like, animal activist meetup group, if there is one. Or in Vancouver, we have the Vancouver Vegans Facebook group, and we have other animal advocacy groups.
Yeah, and meetup.com, there's animal rights advocacy, and that's a good place to go just to look for different events coming up. And I think it's a good idea to try going to events hosted by different groups. So I've been to a bunch of different demonstrations around the area over the years, and there's definitely certain ones that I feel better about when I leave, that I feel like, yeah, that feels in line with my values, and other ones that just don't quite fit for me. And so it's just a matter of just getting out there and being bold enough to do something a little bit uncomfortable and awkward, maybe for a while, and then make the judgment afterwards. So, like, if you've never tried a demonstration or something like that, just get out there and try one, and then if that one didn't feel quite right, go try another one, like, by another group, because they're all different. Some are more anger-based, and some are more positive-based,
Exactly.
And I don't know, I think they kind of each have their place in a way, but yeah, it's a matter of kind of trying, and then from there you make the connections, and maybe you get more involved with that group and what they're doing behind the scenes.
And I think it's also important to have like an ally or someone to go with to these events in the beginning, because it can be really scary, and I know it's hard if you don't know anyone.
That's a good idea.
But there's also like we said, like networking with the communities or the advocacy camp. Like, you'll meet people and you'll have people to go with you, and I think that's extremely helpful, especially if you are nervous.
So what do you think if you want to be active but you just don't have time? The answer that I have to this is, well, first of all, you have time to eat three times a day, probably, so go vegan if you haven't already. And if you are, then you are an advocate for the animals already, and don't say that you aren't, because you're living by example, and the people around you will see that. But take it further, but at least that's a start, right? And what about the workplace? Do any of you have ideas of maybe what advocacy that you can do in the workplace? For me, I'll start. Every Christmas, as you know, is I give out tons of my awesome vegan cookies to everyone at my workplace at UBC, where I work. I work at six different locations with about 50 or more other people, and they all get a taste of what vegan baking is like, and then they go, wow, I didn't know it could be so good, and that sort of just plants a seed. That's easy stuff that you can do. What do you guys think about just doing advocacy sort of just in your daily lives?
I feel a little bit bad that I haven't started this yet, but yay, New Year's resolution. I've been meaning to start like a Meatless Mondays or something.
That's
like
a great idea.
Under that kind of heading, but it's a way for me to like post different articles each week, you know, and they're going to be about a whole bunch of different topics, and sure, it's under the guise of this one day, but the real, sort of purpose, I guess, in my mind, is just to get people thinking about these issues daily. Like, it's just there, you know, it's on the board, right in the lunchroom, like every Monday. So that's something I want to do.
I think, too, just like by speaking your own truth and being educated about animal issues, you can bring a lot of positive things into the world for our animal friends. For example, like, I work at a number of places that do like purchasing for furniture and other items. So I have encouraged them to choose fabrics and materials that are not made from animals and are made from synthetic sources instead, or other choices like that. So sometimes you don't even have to do anything extra. Just by going about your regular things, you can fit that in.
Yeah. And speaking of, just quickly, I just wanted to mention at my work, my boss asked me if I would feel comfortable if she bought a leather couch for the office, because she knows I'm vegan, and just being around me, she starts bringing it up, and I'm not even bringing it up. You know, it's kind of that power of the vegan in the room. People are thinking about what harms animals. Like,
Yeah.
I think the bottom line is just get started, and it's going to be the snowball effect. You'll see all these opportunities arising that maybe you just were sort of blind to before, but now that you're thinking in this lifestyle of what can I do for the animals and how can I live more compassionately, these opportunities will come to you.
Yeah, and doors open as you move.
Oh, definitely.
I like that you said
definitely.
That. Like, you think you're alone in the beginning, but then as you just dedicate yourself to it, just doors open, you'll meet people.
Exactly.
It snowballs, yeah.
Well, as a person who never seems to have enough time, I very much value time balance in one's life. And one of my New Year's resolutions actually is to get more organized in my life. And this is something I've actually been proactively working a lot in the past, this past year. But it's always an ongoing process for me, as many things are. So during my Christmas vacation, as a matter of fact, I took the time to read The Idiot's Guide to Organizing Your Life book, which is really, it's just telling me a lot of what I already know, but it's affirming those things, which is the most important thing. And hopefully to the point where further improvement will emerge as a result of my ongoing intentions in this area. This book states some wise words which are applicable to this discussion, which are how you manage your time, what you allow to take precedence, and how much stress you have in your life could help determine how fit and healthy you are. That makes sense, right? So it's important to take note of all these things so that you can be fit and healthy to do your work for the animals. Again, if you don't have your own health, we won't be that much use to the animals. So I want to know if you can each of you share, what does being fit and healthy mean to you? What is that about exactly? To me, I think it has a lot to do with feeling fulfilled and happy in life. It's about physical and mental health. What is it to you?
Well, I think, when I think of that, I think of just connection. So I'm thinking about connection to community and, you know, to others, and connection to nature and some sense of sacred. Like, what is sacred to you? To me, that if you feel connected and whole and part of a bigger something, then your little problems and worries or stresses of the day or, you know, like, don't become as overwhelming if there's a bigger picture. So that's what health is to me. And I want to become, more part of the yoga community and other communities, not just animal rights. So I think, the balance also is another really part of, big part of health for me, is balance between veganism, animal rights, and other parts of my life, creativity, just fun stuff, and just feeling connected. So
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was actually going to bring up something similar to that, because we get stuck in our little bubble so easily. And I think also, like, just make sure you have time for yourself. Like, if time for yourself is going to a demonstration and that's fun for you, like, it's pretty fun for me. I enjoy most of the time.
You shouldn't really do it if you don't enjoy
exactly,
it,
but,
I think.
But you know what I mean? Like, if that's something that is uplifting to you and makes you feel inspired and happy, like, do that for yourself. But if having some time to yourself is, you know, taking a bath, like Allison mentioned earlier, or just doing yoga, whatever, make sure you have that time, because you need to be mentally healthy as well.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too, is how do you maintain a balanced life, and how do you ensure that we are taking care of ourselves so that we're not consumed by all the work that there is to do for the animals? Because if you face it, you know, there's just so much work that needs to be done in our lifetimes to stop the cruelty that is inflicted upon animals, and sometimes it can become quite overwhelming and despairing. So I want to talk about ways that we can take care of ourselves, just to ensure that we keep in check, we keep in balance, so that we are sustainable and we can keep working for the animals. For me, I think it's always good to be aware of your feelings and to check in with yourself on a regular basis to see how you're feeling, see what you're doing. Is it making you happy? Is it making you not? As you said, like, perhaps attending all these animal rights demos is actually quite depressing for you, because, I don't know, maybe that just doesn't work for you. Maybe that's not your type of advocacy. You really need to check in with yourself. Can you share some ideas of things that work for you to just sort of just to keep going and keep mentally healthy in that area?
This is something I've been really focusing a lot in my own life, because in the summer I took a course about food systems, so I was reading and doing a lot of research, and actually I was really lucky because one of the books I read had a chapter that was really perfect at the end, and it was Melanie Joy's book, Why We Eat Pigs, Wear Cows, and Love Dogs,
Same idea.
But she had a chapter at the end about over-witnessing, and about how she was saying sometimes it's important to, like, once you know a certain amount amount of information, or if you're like in overload of learning about things that might be occurring in the world, it's important to just take a step back sometimes. Because when you put yourself in a position where you're becoming too vulnerable, that your own mental health is at risk, then you're not being very helpful to the animals or to other people as well. Mm-hmm. So that was a really important lesson for me this year. And one of the ways that I really helped to like keep in check with my emotions and stuff is actually there's this really cool vegan cafe in San Francisco called Cafe Gratitude.
And been there.
Yeah. It's very tasty in my opinion. But the people who own it wrote some books, and one of them talks about this thing called a clearing conversation. And it's something that I do like pretty much every day. And it's just kind of like a way for me to like stay present and stuff. So it's just like a couple questions that you can ask to someone else. And it's like a chance to practice like listening and checking in and becoming present. So I think like finding a way to become present, and that's like how I become present. But finding a way to do that is really important for me to maintain my own health and to keep fighting for the animals. Or
yeah, one thing I want to advise as well is I think it's really important to have community around you, as I mentioned before, like-minded people who are sort of all in it together. Sometimes you do feel like you're living in a bubble and that no one really understands, but when you find that there are people around you, whether it be in your city or not, I think that can help even much more.
Yeah, speaking of other people, it is, of course, important to have other people like minds around you. Right now we have this beautiful circle of, you know, four
bubble
strong animal, you know, lovers and activists. And it's lovely. But I think another really important part of emotional health is just accepting that other people around you aren't ready yet a lot of the time, and just not taking it personally. Other people's choices.
For sure.
Yeah. How long did it take us to come to these decisions? It's our path, and it's not everyone's path. Like, they're just not there yet. Yeah. And, like, for me, that's a big one. Just letting it go.
It's
that my friends
don't stress
aren't
out.
There yet.
Yeah.
That my family's not there yet. And, like, and they might never be. And just, like, then focusing on the people out there or trying to reach out to people who are ready and knowing where to put your energy.
That's so true. Like, I totally resonate with that, because it's really hard for me to accept people like trying to dispute what I'm saying, but there's no point in like arguing, especially at demonstrations. People are going to challenge everything that you say. Like, and you have to just keep in mind that out of every two people that are going to challenge what you say, there's 100 people that are supporting you. And you just have to kind of think of that and remember that
right
when you go home.
It always seems that the negative is more prevalent,
exactly.
But really think about the positive that you're doing. And when you are planning your advocacy for the animals this coming year, think about the bottom line, which is that the animals need us. So we must make sure that we are healthy and prepared enough within our own human limits to do whatever we can do to help these other beings. And what that is will emerge on its own through our own trial and efforts, I believe. Hey, maybe you'll be asked to host an animal rights radio show one day, which is exactly what happened to me and each of us, actually, and where I currently find my most significant niche in my animal advocacy. But whatever you do, remember, in order for your advocacy to continue and be sustainable, you have to be healthy. So good health to all in 2013, and let it be a good year for the human and non-human animals alike.
You're listening to 100.5 CFRO. This is Co-op Radio in Vancouver, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. We're going to cover some headlines now. I've just got one current one, and then we're going to look back on 2012. So first of all, on midnight of New Year's Eve, the sale of animal-tested products officially became illegal in Israel as the clock struck midnight.
Yay!
Banned now is the import, sale, and marketing of animal-tested cosmetics, toiletries, and household cleaners. Previously in 2007, the Israeli government had banned using animals to test personal care and household products within the country, but the new law blocks products that have been tested on animals in other countries from even crossing Israel's border. Not sure
how did they get that to happen?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the EU is working on their big, huge ban now, which is set for March 2013. So we'll stay tuned for that, because I know there's the companies are definitely pushing back and trying to push it back like for 5 more years or something.
I think it takes the initiatives of those other countries to get it going before our country will follow suit. But I think it's coming too.
Yep, definitely. Well, hope so. I mean, I haven't heard much about that in North America. It's really other countries are a lot farther
we
ahead of us.
We need to follow their lead.
Yeah. So then now, yeah, let's look back on 2012. There were some pretty big headlines. Of course, you know, the word vegan basically blew up over the last year and was covered on almost all major news sources, like articles and features that, you know, gave veganism and animal rights a fairly good showing. And I think, yeah, the word's definitely out there. But just in terms of animal rights and stuff, I'm just going to cover some of the main headlines. I found a couple good lists, one including Mark Hawthorne's blog, Striking at the Roots. He had a great list of 12 great actions over the year. He mentioned the Japan whale slaughter. So whalers on the last Japan whale hunt killed, sadly, 266 mink whales and one fin whale. The good news is that was well below the 900 they'd been aiming for. And an official from Japan's fisheries agency said the catch was smaller than planned due to factors including weather conditions and sabotage acts by activists. And that, of course, is Sea Shepherd. The amazing anti-whaling campaign highlighted on the TV show Whale War. They hurled stink bombs at the boats and used ropes to try to tangle their propellers, among other tactics, and that was considered a success. So now they're starting up their new campaign shortly, and Captain Paul Watson is back after months in hiding. And there is a court injunction prohibiting them and Paul and Sea Shepherd from attacking Japanese whaling ships. So we'll kind of see how that plays out. I think they have to be no closer than 500 yards or something. Mm-hmm. So, and then a couple other big headlines over 2012 that actually I didn't even catch, like almost half of the ones on Mark Hawthorne's list. So there is just so much news going on, like every day. Like, how do you keep up to date with all this? But so Ireland banned puppy mills in January of 2012. They were one of the biggest commercial dog breeding industries in the world, actually. And so now they're illegal there, and they're illegal in most places around the world still, sadly. But that brought a lot of attention to the issue. So anywhere that has over six breeding dogs is considered a puppy mill, quote unquote. So yeah, hopefully that's cracked down on and starts to end there. Costa Rica is now the first country in the Americas to ban sport hunting, and Botswana is at least the third country to ban hunting in Africa. Both countries still will have exceptions for local traditional hunting. Greece and the Netherlands joined the growing list of areas that have banned the use of animals in circuses. For a full list, which is actually pretty huge, I just looked it up today. You can search worldwide circus bans, and the list just kind of grows and grows year after year. So hopefully we'll see an end to that indefinitely in the coming years. The Netherlands Senate voted in December to ban fur farming. The Netherlands is actually the third biggest fur farm country in the world. They have 6 million minks are killed there right now every year. And the ban came after an inquiry by the Ministry of Agriculture revealed that 93% of the nation disapproves of killing animals for their fur. They have until 2024 to get out of the business.
What?
That is a long time.
That doesn't sound like a big rush.
That should give them enough time, I think.
And for the last few minutes, I just wanted to discuss some highlights in Canada. I wanted to mention what I thought was one of the biggest stories in Canada was the Marineland expose back in the summer.
Right.
There was a huge expose series in the Star newspaper, a huge newspaper in Toronto, in which former employees blew the whistle on the horrible conditions of the water and the health problems of the animals there. Marineland is in Niagara Falls. It's Canada's biggest marine park. There's 40 beluga whales there, bears and deer and tons of other animals. It's just like totally heartbreaking. So there was this expose series that reached so many people, and it culminated in 600 people organized by Marineland Animal Defense showing up at a protest there, and 100 protesters breached the gates and yelled, "Shut it down, shut it down," and came into the main dolphin show ring there. So that was pretty exciting. Which Canadian stories stand out for you guys, just the last couple minutes quickly?
This past year, UBC actually divulged its statistics on its animal testing from the previous year. That's just the one that just popped into my head because I was reading about it the other day. That was pretty big news because it is setting a precedent that we the public need to know and are entitled to know what are happening to animals in research at our public institutions.
Totally. Speaking of just sort of science, I just remembered there was a declaration in July. I don't have the notes on right now, but it recognized animals as having consciousness or something. So that was pretty huge. There was a signed declaration by many scientists. Also, the banning of the shark finning, the sled dog massacre, all huge news. And now we have tougher animal cruelty laws in BC. So, yeah, that was some of the highlights from 2012.
Thanks so much for that, Alyssa. Really interesting. For our feature interview today, which is also an activist profile for the new year, we have journalist and food writer Grant Butler with us. Grant hails to us from Portland, Oregon, where he is known as a writer for the biweekly newspaper food column called Going Vegan, which appears in the mainstream publication The Portland Oregonian. Grant, who was an omnivorous food writer for the newspaper, took it upon himself several years ago to take on the challenge of going vegan for 30 days, and the rest is history. We have Grant on the show today to share with us his inspiring story that launched him into the popular vegan food activist that he is today. Hello, Grant, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on the show today to talk about your journey into vegan activism. You have an interesting story to share, I think, because it's far from the usual, as is the activism that you fell into, which just happens to be part of your daily career. But first to start, can you tell us about your background and how you grew up in Kansas City and what your relationship with food was like as a child growing up?
I grew up in Kansas City in the 1970s, and it was a very meat-centric town. At one point in the last century, Kansas City had some of the largest stockyards in North America, and it was really ingrained into the psyche of the city. We kind of joke that as a kid, we were raised to love and honor God, country, beef, and Royals third baseman George Brett, and not necessarily in that order. So it was really part of kind of the mentality growing up, and it was a part of our family identity. A lot of our meals were focused around meat. My mom was a working mom, and so a lot of dinners came out of boxes with hamburger and things like that. So it was really a part of my growing up.
So fast forward to 2009, you're a food writer for the Portland Oregonian, and you interviewed James McWilliams, who had a profound impact on your life. Can you tell us about what he says about eating meat and how that forced you to look at your own choices and actions?
James McWilliams really explained for me in a way that I hadn't really thought about before the environmental consequences of eating meat. He explained just how much land and resources like water are needed to produce meat. And he explained that, with the world population increasing and continuing to increase, that if we don't seriously change the way we're eating, we face in the very near future certain ecological disaster and possible famine worldwide. And so that got me thinking about my own approach to food. I'm, a person of the Northwest, so care for the environment is part of my wiring. But I hadn't really thought about the environmental consequences of the things I was eating. And James explained to me that if I was serious about the environment, I needed to start thinking seriously about that. Using reusable grocery bags is a really nice gesture, but if you're not paying attention to the carbon footprint of what you're putting into those bags, it's really kind of a meaningless gesture.
So tell us about your journalistic project or challenge that you then decided to take upon yourself and also share with your readers in your food column.
Well, Portland has a huge vegan community, and at the newspaper, we'd never really made any effort to really understand that community. And so, dovetailing with my own interest in learning how to get by with less meat in my diet, I decided to try to embrace the vegan community here, and so I embarked on a 30-day experiment where I stopped eating any animal products entirely and really plugged into our vegan food scene here. And it was really an interesting experiment that I ended up not ending because I had so many kind of epiphanies during the process. You know, I almost immediately started having things like better sleep, and I wasn't feeling tired all the time. I wasn't having to go to Starbucks every day in the middle of the afternoon. And I started having more energy, and it really gave me a window into what I was putting into my body really had some direct correlations to my daily outlook on the world. And that was a key thing in me deciding to continue with it.
Well, I know you went into your 30-day vegan challenge with positive intentions. You prepared prior, but there have been other writers that have taken on the same kind of challenge. Can you talk about perhaps the differences between the way you approached it and how other writers have maybe approached it with not such great results?
Yeah, you know, it's in no way an original idea. Lots of people have tried this over the years. But of all of the other experiments with vegan eating that I'd read about, everybody approached it with the mentality of, here's all the things I'm doing without. And it was kind of through this negative prism that they focused their vegan experiments. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted to learn how to open up more things. Again, I was trying to figure out how to eat less meat in my diet, if not eliminate it altogether. And so instead of thinking about all the things I was doing without, it was like, there's this giant produce section. Let's go find new things here. Let's go experiment with new things that I've never cooked with at home. I love cooking. And so for me, it was a chance to try new things and open new doors. And that was part of the reason I think it was success, was because I didn't approach it from a negative perspective. I approached it in a positive way.
And what was what happened at the end of the month-long project? What was the end result?
Well, I stuck with it, and I'm now coming up on my fourth anniversary as a vegan. It's the first of February, so it's totally agreed with me.
Congratulations!
Yeah.
So, tell us about how Going Vegan, your column, came to be.
Well, when I did my vegan experiment, I did it in a very public way. I blogged about it every day on the Oregonian's website, and I also wrote about it in print, and so it was kind of a public way of embracing this new way of eating. So when the 30 days were up, there was all this attention that was paid to it from readers, and there was this new audience of people that really hadn't considered the food coverage in the newspaper before, and it was like, finally, there's a voice that speaks to me in the paper and online. And when the editors figured out that there was really an appetite among readers for this, they encouraged me to keep going, and it's some of the most read material that's in our food coverage.
Well, can you talk about what you feel your activism of writing a vegan newspaper column has accomplished for the public?
Well, it's for me, it's been a real shift in thinking at the here of vegan as being this weird other kind of food. I'm all about trying to bring it into the mainstream. And what I hear from a lot of people is that maybe they're not interested in entirely going vegan, but they're interested in things like the Meatless Monday movement, or they're trying to figure out how that they can eat a plant-based diet 2 or 3 days a week for improvement of their health. And that's what really excites me. You know, I love it if people decide they want to go entirely vegan, but I think about people like my parents who kind of, in solidarity with me, tried to start eating more vegetarian and vegan food, and they saw such dramatic improvements in their weight and their health just by making slow incremental changes, if not going all the way. And for me, that's been really powerful in trying to, you know, get people to think of plant-based eating not as this strange thing that's, you know, from Mars or something like that, but it's something that anybody can do, and that it can be a part of your daily eating routine, and it can be downright delicious.
And you're making it accessible by you're validating it as well, because it's appearing in this major newspaper that people respect. So there you go.
Yeah, there's, you know, I'm kind of a rare breed. There aren't a lot of mainstream publications
right.
that have this kind of regular coverage. But again, I think be, because there's such an audience for it, I think that's been the real revelation for the editors here and why they've been so supportive of the work that I'm doing.
So what are you most proud of in your accomplishments with regards to your writing and spreading the message of veganism?
Well, I think what I'm most proud of is that while I entered into this out of a concern for the environment and health was a secondary concern, I'm proud of the fact that it's really opened my heart to so many of the issues that face animals in agricultural systems. It was something that I was aware of in the back of my mind, and like a lot of people, I was in denial about what goes on in animal agriculture, and this journey has really opened my heart to what's out there and brought compassion also to the forefront of the reasons I continue to eat this way. And that's not something I had expected entirely. Again, it was kind of this entering into it for these altruistic reasons about concern for the environment and then discovering along the way that it spoke to my heart as well. You know, I grew up in the church, and, you know, when I was growing up, values of compassion were something that were, you know, taught, and we were, you know, taught to, you know, cherish life and put value in life, and it just seems like a logical thing that it should extend to the way we eat. And for me, that's been a total easy connection to make once my eyes and my heart were open to that.
I think that's a wonderful point you make, that the church does teach us to have compassion for all beings, but most people don't. They fail to make that connection, but you had that background, so it naturally connected for you. I'm curious as to if you ever get criticisms of your work, the column that you do, and how do you deal with them?
I get a little bit of criticism. Some of it is from, you know, old school readers who, you know, don't want to. You know, they feel like I'm making a political gesture by advocating eating more vegetables. And okay, if that's how they perceive it, you know, that's fine. You know, there still is an awful lot of mainstream food coverage in our pages, and I point people towards that. And it's just I'm one voice among many in the food coverage that we have. I do get some criticism from people in the vegan community because we sometimes write about things that are not vegan. And what I try to do with my regular food writing is make vegan one of those options, so that if we're doing a story, say, about lasagna, among the recipe options we'll provide, you know, a mainstream one, we'll provide a vegetarian one, and we'll also provide a vegan recipe alongside of it. And for me, that's just one more way that we're showing this is not a different thing. This is just as good. It's just it's not strange. It's a way that you can have this as a viable option if you want to go down that path. And I've been really happy that we've been able to do that kind of coverage.
You know, I think that's just really wonderful activism on your part. We were talking about that earlier in the show, is how can we incorporate our advocacy for veganism or for animals just throughout our daily lives? And we were talking about how just opportunities will present themselves in our daily lives. Just like you, I bet other people at the newspaper, they wouldn't have even thought of providing vegan options just because it's not on their radar. But someone like you sees that article is going to appear and you go, well, obviously you should have a vegan option, and you suggest that and they accept it. Otherwise, that wouldn't happen. So good for you.
Yeah, you know, and it's so easy to do when you stop and think about it. You know, right now we're working on you know, the annual Super Bowl story, because you got a food section has to have a Super Bowl story. Well, let's make sure there's vegan options, because, you know, vegans like football too.
They do, huh? So that's wonderful. I'd like to ask you about how you see veganism growing as a trend or culture in our society. From your own experiences and observations, what are your thoughts as to whether we are hitting a tipping point or not in people shifting towards adopting plant-based diets?
Well, I think that you've got a lot of big-name celebrity chefs talking about it and treating it seriously is a sign that we're moving in the right direction. You know, when a superstar chef like Jose Andres is talking about vegetables being sexy, vegetables are where it's at. And when you see people like even Mario Batali embracing Meatless Mondays, I think it's a sign that it's arrived, and this is food that people are starting to take seriously. I think, you know, Michelle Obama and her efforts with the Kids Fitness and Healthy Eating campaign has a lot to do with it, as does the White House Garden. I think that's helped, you know, really put a voice out there that this is an important way to start thinking about eating when you're at a very young age. And I think we're at a very exciting time, you know, being vegan eating, you know, 10 years ago wasn't necessarily an easy thing to do, even in a town like Portland. And I think that we're now at a point where it's going to be so much easier for people all across the United States and Canada to really embrace this kind of eating, because it's easier to do, because there's products out there, and there are people in the restaurant world that are starting to take it seriously. It's a really good trend, I think.
So this show we've themed as being our New Year's show. We were talking about New Year's resolutions earlier on in the show. I'm curious as to if you might want to share what some of your resolutions are for this year, as they might pertain to just, you know, your general well-being or animals or food.
I made a real realistic New Year's resolution. Drink more green smoothies this year.
That's great.
I'm a person who sometimes struggles getting enough fruit into my diet, and I found that smoothies are a great way for me to start my day. And, you know, figuring out how to toss an extra handful of spinach or kale into those just kind of helps jumpstart my morning. And so my goal this year is to make that a more regular part of my eating routine, just out of concern for health and getting more fruits in my diet.
And do you have a Vitamix?
You know, I don't. I lust after those every time I go to Costco and see them.
Yeah.
I've got a nice blender, but yeah, maybe this is the year that I make the jump.
Well, I'll tell you, a tip from me is buy it at the Portland Veg Fest. That is the best price you'll ever find one at, because I've been pricing them for a few years now. And that was actually my plan, was to buy one either at the Seattle Veg Fest or Portland Veg Fest this year, because, as I said, best price, except I actually got one for Christmas, so I don't need to do that anymore. So another quick question that I have for you is, you live in the vegan capital of North America, Portland, Oregon, and you're a vegan food writer in Portland. So I'd like to know if you could talk about some of your favorite places to eat in your fine city that you call Portland, Oregon.
Anybody who comes to Portland has to make a pilgrimage to Portobello Vegan Trattoria. This is a really awesome Italian restaurant that happens to be vegan, but I've taken people who eat meat there, and they love it, love it, love it. Another place that's kind of new on the scene here, but is definitely worth checking out, is a restaurant called Natural Selection, which is a vegan and vegetarian restaurant. They have four-course tasting menus that are either vegetarian or vegan, and it's really creative, inventive cooking. And again, it's a chef, this fellow named Aaron Wu, who really understands that cooking vegetables can be exciting and a real adventure for the palate.
And if you could maybe just talk a little bit about, I've been like looking through your Going Vegan articles recently, and if maybe you could just share with our listeners what some of the things that you have covered in the past have, so perhaps you might have some new readers.
Well, the story that I have coming up this next Tuesday is all about vegan comfort food. And again, it kind of ties in with our talk about New Year's resolutions. You know, if you've been to the gym in the last week, you've seen all the people trying to, you know, lose some of their holiday weight. And so I thought it would be fun to offer some comforting dishes that happen to be low calorie, because, you know, January is really a crummy time to diet. You know, the produce isn't so good, and it's, you know, eating salad is not something that your body naturally gravitates towards when it's cold. So we have some skillet casserole from Isa Chandra Moskovitz, which is kind of inspired by Hamburger Helper. So, coming back to my 70s roots there. And then we also have a vegan eggplant parmesan from Alicia Simpson. And it is an
We've had her on the show before.
Comforting dish.
Yeah.
And it's only 150 calories per serving. That
sounds awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Grant, to speak about your journey into vegan activism. And to read Grant's Going Vegan column in the Portland Oregonian newspaper online, please go to www.oregonlive.com. Thanks, Grant, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Again, you're listening to 100.5 CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. That was the Animal Voices show for today. We produce these wonderful shows for you weekly, and how to keep in touch, really, is just to head straight to our website. It's animalvoices.org. There you can find out how to subscribe to our podcast to stay up to date and listen to us at your leisure. There's also links and videos to learn a whole lot more about our guests and features, and you can learn how to step up to support the work we do every week to deliver quality content about animal advocacy and compassionate living guidance. So yeah, that's the place to go to learn how to keep in touch with us. Our social networking is all linked there. And yeah, so make sure to stay in, tune in next week and stay tuned to this station to listen to Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith coming up next. And we're going to leave you with a song today. It's called Pomegranate by vegan Australian artist Emmeline Delapay, who will be performing a fundraiser show for the animals at Dow Organics Restaurant in North Vancouver tomorrow night. That's January 6th, Saturday night at 6:30 p.m.
January 5th, I think.
Okay, sounds good.
Perhaps it was in the summer when I came back from London. She said I looked ill. Or maybe it was when I cooked animals just to pay the bills.
When did I lose my eyesight?
Or maybe it was when I lost all that bloodline on the kitchen floor in early fall.
When did I lose my eyesight?
Or maybe it was when she took it all and came back begging for more. This is the only way I know how to find my way back home. Travel by song. Cause at the end of the day, all that we really have is ourselves. One constant beating out just. And I'm sorry, but it's going to hurt. I am sorry, but it's going to stay. But there's no way around. It's just how it goes. 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 There's only so much one person can take, so my heart broke like a pomegranate against stone.
When did I lose my eyesight?
I've fallen farther than I believe was possible. I'm a bloody wreck.
When did I lose my eyesight?
But now I'm thoughtful, I am humble, I am compassionate. This week I'm learning to walk, and next week I begin to climb upwards and out of here. This is the only way I know how to find my way back home. Travel by song. Cause at the end of the day, all that we really have is ourselves. One constant beating out chest. And I'm sorry, but it's going to hurt. I am sorry, but it's going to stay. I am sorry, but there's no way around. It's just how it goes. 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 Just how it goes. Just how it goes. It's just how it goes. Just how it goes. Just how it goes. Just how it goes. It's just how it goes. It's just how.